Chapter 3. Saturday, April 2nd, 0011 New Era. 2020 hours. The crack of pool balls echoed over the banter of the Black Cherry, Richmond's premier nightclub. As soon as the orientation of Falcon Platoon had come to a close earlier in the afternoon, the men and women of Charlie Squad, minus Major Tacker, gathered together to plan their celebration. It was their first official day as active members of Eden. The Black Cherry wasn't the largest club in Richmond, nor the most elite. The reason for its popularity was simple. It felt good. When someone was at the Black Cherry, they were home. That was what prompted the members of Charlie Squad to enter its darkened doors and partake in its flavorful smells. Smells of liquor, smells of nachos and cheap finger foods, smells of good times. It was the perfect way to kick off a new career path. The group borrowed several excursion vehicles intended for free operative use in public transit. Once they arrived, they claimed a pair of oval tables near the front door. Though conversation saturated the drive, it wasn't until they took seats together that words flowed with vigor. As could be expected, it centered on their new careers. Henry was the first to bring the commanding officers into the discussion.
Can you guys believe that speech Colonel Leyland gave us? Was that supposed to be motivational or something?
Sasha smiled as she sipped her beer.
Somehow, I don't think motivation was very high on his list.
I know. What kind of dung was that?
Scott only half-smiled as he watched Sasha drink. Nightclubs weren't his thing, nor were alcoholic beverages. Apparently, they were for most of the others. He, David, and Jaden were the only three who refrained.
It was honesty. We're not what he expected. He just came out and said it.
Don't you think a little encouragement would have been nice, though?
I guess it would have, but it's not necessary. It's not like he's obligated to make us feel good.
He's right. I mean, I know you must remember all the talk in Philly about commanding officers. We just got rough ones all.
But still, all I'm saying is that he could have been nicer.
David sipped his soda.
He's not paid to be nice.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I guess as far as motivation for the unit goes, it probably wasn't the most uplifting speech in the world. But it still struck me as honest.
Scott thought honesty was a good thing. It was always good to see it reflected in people. Sasha smiled.
Well, I'm just glad we got Major Tacker. He seems a bit more personal.
Yeah, Leyland could have been more like Tacker, I think.
Anyway, I bet the Colonel is sweet. He just has to be serious about his job.
Sweet?
Yeah, all old men are sweet.
Beacon turned to David.
You hear that? She thinks you're sweet.
David's eyes narrowed.
How old do you think the Colonel is? He's got to be in his 50s or something.
Ziegler sat down his mug of beer and entered the discussion.
I think he's in his upper 50s.
Donald, the giant demolitionist, shook his head.
All's I know, he's for real. I don't want to make him mad, man.
Come on, you? I know that old lunker doesn't scare you.
I had coaches, man. Them old coaches is for real. Don't ever tell them they old.
Scott smiled. Donald was right. Tell a football coach he's old, and you're liable to get a helmet thrown at you.
Enough about Leyland. What do you guys think of Tacker?
Natasha grinned at the mention of Tacker's name.
He said something about we're better than Delta Squad or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. But what do you think we'll all be doing?
No idea. Shoot stuff.
Ziegler gave Henry a patronizing look and said to Sasha,
I'd imagine if there's a choice, we'd lead an assault over Delta. I don't think anyone expects much out of us Alphas. At least out of most of us anyway.
Of course. I am the greatest warrior in the world, so he expects more out of me.
Ziegler mouthed the word idiot before he went on.
I don't think we'll be given anything serious until we prove ourselves. I wanted to say something about age, too. Don't forget that Klaus Färber is 48.
Okay, yeah. If we're going to talk about Klaus Färber, and I didn't mean that age makes people useless, thank you. When I said that to Donald, I meant that he could probably take the Colonel if he wanted to.
I ain't said nothing, man.
You were making a claim about age, and you were wrong. Färber proves you wrong.
Right. Hey, man, lay off him. He wasn't making any claim. He was just...
I talking to you?
Excuse me?
Whoa, fellas.
He was making an argument that wasn't worth a pile of dung, and I shut him up.
All right, someone better shut down this bucket of snot, or he's gonna get lammed out of it.
Guys, calm down. Nobody meant anything. Just calm down. It's our first day. We're all a little anxious. Let's get it off on the right foot, okay?
Right. Whatever. Not worth it. Let's be moving on.
I didn't mean to upset you, man. I wasn't trying to say anything.
Whatever, change it now. I don't care.
Sasha cut in before the argument could be revisited and turned to face Jaden and Michael.
You guys don't talk much, huh?
Just listening,
Michael said.
I mean, nothing really to say. I do think it's cool that Captain Ferber is 48 and he's still the best leader in Eden. But, I mean, the conversation wasn't really going there.
Well, it's going there now just for you. Anyone here met Klaus Ferber?
Scott was skeptical. Met Klaus Ferber? He didn't know anybody could meet Klaus Ferber. The man was a military legend, the commanding officer of Vector Squad, the most renowned and respected unit on the planet. They held as much weight as anyone in the high command.
Does he even show up at the academy?
No. The only time he works outside of Berlin is when it's something serious. He wouldn't waste his time in Philadelphia.
Isn't his son a cadet in Philadelphia?
Natasha asked.
Strom Ferber, yeah. He'll probably be the most hyped soldier of the century. He's still got a ways to go, though.
I saw Strom a couple times in the weight rooms. Looks just like his dad. Blonde hair and everything. Not quite as big, but still chiseled like nothing I've ever seen.
If he takes his father's footsteps, he'll climb the chain of command like it's nothing. Klaus has been rocking the alien war since it began.
The alien war. Scott hoped the conversation would go to it in general.
Speaking of the war, anybody have any theories about it? Why we're even in it?
You know what's funny? They never once mentioned that in Philadelphia. Theories.
That's done on purpose. They don't want theories running rampant until they know something themselves.
So when are they gonna know something? I mean, how long has it been now? 10 years?
9. They came 2 years into the new era.
That's right. It was that January. It happened a week before the second annual World Peace Conference.
David smiled sardonically.
Ironic, huh?
Even though it was years ago, Scott remembered that day like it was yesterday. Everyone did. Friday, January 11th, 0002, New Era. The world was anticipating the World Peace Celebration, the WPC, the day that honored mankind's transition from old era to new era, an era of global harmony. It was 3:14 in the afternoon when first contact was made. It was in Hong Kong. It was the Bakma. 4 of their no-boats, alien attack ships with the ability to completely dematerialize from view, appeared over the city. There wasn't even time for humanity to hope for peaceful contact. The aliens engaged the moment they arrived. Thousands of citizens were killed before the no-boats vanished as mysteriously as they appeared, their ships dematerializing into the sky. In fact, it was their sudden dematerialization that gave birth to their names. When the ships disappeared, it prompted the commander of Hong Kong's defense force to ask his radar operator how many enemy boats were still in the air. The radar operator's answer was obvious. The world panicked, and Eden was formed. The Earth Defense Network, Earth's unified attempt to defend itself from the very beings they sought to find for so long. For centuries, people wondered if they were alone in the galaxy. They finally had their answer. By the time the Ceratopians and Atheni arrived, in late May of that same year, there were 3 fully functional Eden facilities on Earth: Atlanta, Novosibirsk, and Berlin. It was amazing how quickly Eden was organized with a global community at the helm. It couldn't have been formed faster, as 0003 marked the year when the alien war truly erupted. Incursions were no longer rare occurrences. They were commonplace. There were over 150 alien attacks in 0003, as opposed to the 5 that took place in 0002. The increased attacks became the norm year after year, but they rarely consisted of more than a few spaceships. For some reason, the aliens never seemed to bring the full load. It was still a mystery why. Natasha returned to Ziegler.
So, 9 years later and we still don't know anything. Doesn't that strike anybody as a little weird?
Scott slid his hands into his pockets. Weird didn't begin to cover it.
The news loves to talk about the Atheni control theory.
Well, it makes the most sense. The Greys are the only ones that have been seen with both the Bakma and the Ceratopians.
Then why don't the Bakma and the Ceratopians work together?
I don't know. I never said it was the right theory.
So what do you think's going on?
The Atheni control theory is a joke. That's all I know. If you had the Bakma and the Ceratopians at your fingertips, why wouldn't you send them in together? Why wouldn't you put them in your own ships instead of sending them in theirs? We've never even seen an Athene vessel. Imagine a ship of Bakma and Ceratopians fighting side by side. How do you stop that?
Why don't we hear anything about interrogations? I know they must happen.
They do. It's just not something Eden wants out in the public. That's all on a need-to-know basis, and none of us need to know. Our job is just to shoot. We know the aliens are hostile. That's all that matters.
How do we know they're all hostile?
Maybe shooting people is their customary way of saying hello.
Sorry. Forget it.
I'm only picking.
The bottom line is we don't know why they're here. It's just another aspect of the whole mystery. We may never know.
Ziegler blinked as the sound almost cut off his words. The beeps were loud. They were sequenced. The operatives' focus shifted from the room down to their belts. Their comms. It was a call to the hangar. Charlie Squad had a mission. For a full second, the operatives dropped their jaws and stared. Then all hell broke loose.
How much time did Tactus say we had?
5 minutes!
We're in the middle of the Bloody City!
We can make it.
The drag race back to Richmond was chaos. Amid the screech of tires and blasts of horns, the Eden vehicles tore through the city streets. The military highway that led to Richmond Base was on the outskirts of the city, and traffic was dense. By the time they got there, it was 2317. They had received the call at 2309.
Richmond loomed far in the distance, and the accelerators were slammed to the floor.
Scott radioed the Eden checkpoints as they approached the airstrip, and clearance was given to them to bypass the gates and go directly to the field. It wasn't until the vehicles decelerated to an inertia-pained halt that Scott made another realization.
None of the operatives were in their proper uniforms.
The clock read 23:25. They were 11 minutes late. They reached the hangars 12 and a half minutes after the initial alert of the comms. As they gasped for breath, their eyes scanned the hangar for Falcon Platoon. They found only Major Tacker. He wasn't difficult to spot. He was the only man in the hangar. Not even the technicians were about. The Vulture transports were there, though none were prepped for flight. As the pace of the operatives slowed, a wave of confusion washed over them. Something was not right. At that moment, Scott made the connection. He groaned, bent forward, and propped his hands against his knees. It had been a test. From within the hangar, Tacker's wicked glare brooded.
I regret to inform the city of Cincinnati that, due to the inability of Charlie to reach its transport in time, a dozen citizens met untimely deaths while waiting for help to arrive.
The operatives buckled over in exhaustion, and the Major spoke into his comm.
Thank you, Command. It's over.
Our pleasure, Major.
Miss Rhodes, how long did I tell you had to reach the hangar this morning?
5 minutes, sir.
Mr. Carter, how long did I tell you had to reach the hangar this morning?
5 minutes, sir.
Private McCray, can you vouch for that?
Yes, sir.
Anyone want to take a guess at the time on my watch? Oh, come on now. Nobody wants to give it a guess? 13 minutes. 13 minutes. That, my fellow operatives, is not pathetic. It goes far beyond pathetic. This is absolutely pitiful. It's worthless. Stand up straight!
Charlie Squad snapped upright, their hands shot to their sides.
You have brought shame and humiliation to this squad, and you haven't been in it for a day. If this had been a real call, people would have died because of you. Since 5 minutes seems to be a little hard for you all, we're going to tweak that a little bit. In future calls, you have 3 minutes to get from wherever the hell you are to the hangar. I came prepared for this. I hoped it would have gone differently. But I came prepared anyway. Mr. Remington and Mr. Bell are familiar with suicide drills, I'm sure.
Scott almost groaned. Anyone who knew anything about sports was familiar with suicide drills. They were physical nightmares. They were the worst. His peripherals shifted to Donald. The large black man's frame sunk.
Allow me to explain them to everyone else. There are four officers waiting for you right now in the training field. They marked off 10 yards for every minute you were late. 130 yards. Your instructions are simple. You have 130 yards to run. You sprint 10, then you sprint back to the starting line. You sprint 20, then you sprint back to the starting line. You sprint 30, then you sprint back to the starting line. And until you have returned from the 130-yard mark, you do not stop running. You do not pause for a break. If you fall on your face because you can't stand it, then you crawl. If anyone stops, everyone starts over. Furthermore, since you have collectively failed to protect humanity tonight, you will each have a chance to save humanity. In the corner of the hangar, you will find 10 duffel bags. They have each been filled with the appropriate amount of sand to mimic your average citizen. During the course of this run, you will each have a citizen strapped to you.
Scott's mouth fell open. 130 yards worth of suicide was enough, but carrying someone? That was insane. Tacker's attention shifted to Vulture 7.
This, as I'm sure you remember, is your transport. I noticed tonight it's in need of a cleaning, and so that is exactly what you'll do once the run is over. When the last runner finishes, not before, you will all come straight back to the hangar to clean and polish Vulture 7, inside and out. You'll find buckets and sponges in the maintenance closet. Only once this has been completed will the officers dismiss you to your quarters. Let this show you the price of being careless. It will be worse if you fail a second time. Now get to work!
The operative's gazes sunk. There were no grumbles of disdain. There were no whispers of remorse. As the operatives shuffled across the hangar to claim their sandbag citizens, not a word was spoken. The bags were strapped on, and they filed toward the field where they began the sprints. Tacker watched them for several minutes as he stood in the doorway of the hangar, his hands in his pockets. It was a cool night. The operatives were fortunate for that. He stepped back from the doorway and filed back to the main building of Richmond. There was nothing more he wished to see. Chapter 4. Sunday, April 3rd. 0011 New Era. 10:30 hours. The next morning. Scott's eyes cracked open, and he squinted through the darkness of his room. It was morning. His body ached, and an attempt to lift his head sent shockwaves through his shoulders and stomach. His muscles burned like fire. He could barely remember the run. Aside from the pain, it felt like a dream. Several people had vomited, but he couldn't remember who. The one thing he knew was that no one had spoken. Not one word. They ran, and they polished the Vulture, but not once had anyone opened their mouths. He glanced at the clock and groaned. It was 10:30. He had overslept for church. The congregations were already singing, and he was still in bed due to irresponsibility. Last night was stupid. He knew it was stupid then, but he had gone along with it anyway. Wisdom fell to peer pressure. He slipped out of bed and stumbled to the sink, where he wet his face with a touch of cold water. He padded to the closet and glanced to the bunk. David was still asleep. Nicole. He needed to call her. 2 full days had passed since he'd heard her voice. He needed her words, her oxygen. She was probably worried. His stupidity suddenly went beyond the scope of the Black Cherry. He'd been stupid for not calling her instead. He needed to call her. But not now. Scott tugged up the zipper of his jersey and gave a silent glance around the room. He crept to the door, opened it and stepped into the hall. While Scott had trained in Philadelphia, Nicole stayed at Michigan to finalize her medical degree. It would take a little more than a month to finish now, at which point she would begin her residency with a local hospital. If everything panned out, she would then move to Richmond. They would get married and live happily ever after. That was the plan. The hallways were empty, normal for typically lazy Sundays. Scott found a hall directory where he searched for Tacker's office. He found it and began walking in that direction. The problem came with the unknown. Eden was a calling. He believed that with all of his heart. But was it a calling that left room for him and her? It was a question he asked himself often. He loved her, and she loved him. That was enough, wasn't it? Love could overcome anything, and love would win in the end. That was how it worked. That was how it was supposed to work. But was that how reality worked? What if she couldn't move to Richmond? What if it took her longer to finish school? What if one of them gave up? The answers were in the hands of God. It still failed to bring him comfort. It was only a matter of minutes until he stood before Tacker's office. The golden letters, Major John Tacker, glared imposingly at him from the woodwork of the door. What was he doing? This wasn't like football. An apology and a victory next week wouldn't erase a mistake. This was Eden. This was Earth. An errant throw could be rectified. The loss of lives could not. His fist reached for the door, where it hovered against the wood. What would he say? That he was sorry? That it wouldn't happen again? That it was a rookie mistake? It was only a drill, but it was a telling one. Had it been real, citizens would have died. Graves would have been dug. They would have failed. His hand returned to his side. The hallway remained silent as he continued to stare at the door. Finally, he pivoted his feet away from the door and walked slowly back down the hall. An apology would be useless. Tacker wouldn't want to hear it anyway. David was still asleep when Scott returned to his room. It was easier to slide out of uniform than to climb into it, so Scott stripped to his boxers and hung his jersey with little disturbance. He brushed back the sheets of his bed and slipped under the covers. His eyes closed, and he fell asleep. When Scott opened his eyes again, the lights were still off. The upper bunk was still silent. The room was still idle. He glanced at the clock. Almost 1400. He remembered finding Tacker's door only hours earlier. He remembered failing to knock on it. It was unlike him to hide from confrontation, even when it meant he'd be the one issuing the apology. He was a leader. He was a quarterback for the Michigan Bobcats. Eden wasn't like football. But leadership was the same across the board. He wrenched himself out of bed, stretched, and looked into David's bunk, though David wasn't there. The room had been abandoned. With little else to do, Scott donned his jersey and stepped out into the hall. He decided not to visit Tacker's door again, not this time. He wanted to remember the guilt of not following through. He wanted to remember the guilt of not owning up when he knew he should have. He wanted to remember it so that when the next opportunity to step up presented itself, there would be no hesitation. For now, he would search for his roommate. The search did not last long. The nearest point of interest was the soldiers' lounge, and it was there that Scott found David, along with Beacon, Henry, and red-haired Natasha. There were about a dozen people in the room, and the four from Charlie's squad sat together at a table in the back corner. Scott weaved through the tables toward them. David saw him first.
What's up, Scott?
Not much.
What are you guys talking about?
Last night.
Oh. Where's Jay?
At the range. Left early this morning. Been there ever since, he has.
He went by himself?
He did. Never said much of nothing, just went.
Did he take his hat?
He did. I'm bloody serious. He walked out of the room with his hat on his head.
Amazing. How long you guys been here?
About an hour. We've just been talking about other things. God, we must have talked about food for 45 minutes.
Really? Food?
Yeah. We ate together earlier. It was bad.
What did they have?
It's still up for debate.
Wow, that's bad.
You hurting as bad as we are?
Yeah, my legs are killing me. The fact that we screwed up feels just as bad, though.
I don't know about that. This pain is pretty bad. Ugh, and I'm tired, too. I woke up completely out of it. I haven't felt this bad since the first month of Philadelphia. What?
I love my first month in Philadelphia.
Ugh. Not me. The morning musters killed me.
We got up real early in the force. Real early. When I was new, it was hard to get used to. But after the first week or so, I loved it. Even on my off days, I'd get up before sunrise. It's just better in the morning.
I guess the academy was a cakewalk for you then, right?
It wasn't a problem for me at all. I was used to it before I got there. As long as there's a pot of coffee ready to go in the morning, I'm wide awake.
I love coffee.
There was nothing like the aroma of fresh brew to perk the nostrils. It alone could lure him out of bed on even the worst of mornings.
Speaking of which...
I don't like it. Breakfast tea. Now that's grand.
So what do you guys think about last night?
I agree with what you said before. Knowing it was our fault feels worse than being sore. It's especially bad because they preached to us from day one about responsibility. I for one feel like I should have said something. I think that's what was the worst for me, that I just went along with it. Going to bars and pubs isn't even my lifestyle.
Yeah, but do you really think you'd have said something, even if you did realize it was wrong last night? I know for me, I wouldn't have. Everyone was having a grand time, and it was our first night together. I think it was bollocks that he gave us a test at all. I mean, that was day bloody one. Let us live a little bit, right?
I have no problem with him doing it. We got careless, and we got what we deserved. What if it were real? If it were real, the people who died would have been on us.
I think they should let people have the first night to themselves. Go out, get steamed, get it out of your system.
As an operative, you can't do that, though. We're on call 24/7.
Right. I know that. I know you got a point. I know it was a mistake. I just... Vic, I wish we wouldn't have fell for it. It's so cliché, drilling us on our first night.
What do you think, Henry? You're quiet over there.
I don't know. I just, for me, I guess it was kind of a reality check.
What do you mean?
It's just, when the comms started going off, it hit me. When it was all over, I wasn't even worried about what Tacker was saying. That didn't matter to me much. It's just, when the comms started going off, that's what I remember. I remember thinking, oh, Vec, I really have to do it now.
You mean fight?
Well, yeah.
And that got you scared?
Of course. I remember the first thing that popped in my head was, I could die tonight.
Henry, that's a bad way to go about looking at it. You can't be thinking like that. I mean, you start thinking like that in the middle of a war.
Yeah, I know. That's what made me start to really think about this.
Wait, you mean think about Eden?
Yeah. I hope this was the right thing for me to do.
Henry, but you shouldn't be thinking about that now. That's something you'd think about before you signed the paper to come on.
I know.
What made you decide to sign on then?
It's like, I just wanted to do it. I don't want to just do nothing. Everyone has their thing, but nobody likes a talk seller.
Henry, did you do this to be liked?
No, I didn't do it to be liked. That's not it exactly, but I can see how you got there. I hated being a talk seller. It's probably one of the worst jobs on the planet, because everybody hates you. Everywhere I'd go, for any job I applied for, I was always the talk seller. It's like a tag for life. The only place I could go where it didn't matter was here. Here nobody cares what you did. You're alive and you can shoot. That's all that matters. Here, I'm not a talk seller. I'm a soldier defending Earth.
But what if you die or get blown to bits? Is that better than talk selling?
Yeah. I thought it was anyway. That's why I don't know now. It's like, that's how I came into it. I thought I wouldn't care. Then last night came, it was like, bam, this is real.
Well, Henry, you've got to ask yourself now. Do you think you're ready for Eden?
I want to be. I'm trying.
All right. I guess that's the best you can do. You got good marks at the academy anyway.
Well, I don't want to be blown to bits. Someone's got to keep the family genes alive.
And that's you.
It is. It has to be. I'm the only son my ma had.
Well, you'd better find someone to help with that.
Scott and David exchanged a sidelong look.
You're offering?
She shrugged and smiled enigmatically.
Anyway, I think I can do good in Eden. All I need is a chance to prove myself.
Henry was cut off as Natasha pushed up from her chair.
You're leaving?
Yes. I feel like going for a swim.
You want some company?
Sure.
Class.
Beacon rose from his chair and glanced at the other three men.
I'll talk to yees later.
Before anyone could respond, the couple slipped through the tables and out of the room. Scott watched as they disappeared out of view.
Is what just happened what I think just happened?
Amazing.
Wow. Just like that, huh?
Why can't I get women like that?
You don't want women like that.
So do you think they're...
What? You really think they're swimming?
Man.
David shifted his gaze to Scott.
Speaking of people getting up and leaving, I've been meaning to ask you, where'd you go this morning?
You heard me leave the room?
No, but I woke up and asked you what time it was, and you weren't there.
Oh, I just went for a walk. It wasn't anything important.
Where'd you go?
Just around, nowhere in particular. I needed to think.
All right. I was just curious.
I think I'm going to head back to my room.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm just tired.
I think we're all pretty whipped up today.
Henry stood up.
I'll talk to you guys later on.
Later, bud.
Take it easy, man.
The two men watched as Henry slipped out of the room. As soon as he was gone, David sighed.
I feel bad for him. He shouldn't be here.
Scott chuckled as he stared into his now empty coffee cup.
You know who I feel bad for? Every person who leaves the table. Because as soon as they're gone, we start talking about them.
Yeah, that's why I'm leaving with you. I'm afraid you'll talk about me once I'm gone.
Right, because you know, I love to have conversations with myself.
Right.
I know what you mean, though. I thought about death before I signed up. I think everyone does. That's when you've got to come to grips with reality, not after you've gone through Philadelphia.
Yeah, part of it's his fault. Because if he jumped into this, it's on his shoulders. But at the same time, I know why he's doing it. I hate talk sellers, too.
Yeah, me too.
At least we're both jerks.
Yeah, we can find comfort in that. I'm starving, man. I'm gonna go grab a bite to eat if the cafeteria's still open.
It might not be now. Go and check, I suppose.
All right, I'll see you later.
I'll be in the room.
The two men nodded to each other, stepped out of the soldiers' lounge, and went their separate ways. The rest of the day was spent in routine. That evening, the members of Charlie's squad met and further discussed the day's events, from bad food to Tacker's discipline. When night came, they filed into their beds and slept. This was the standard for the next few days as group workouts and combat sessions took their place among morning activities. Operative life at Richmond took shape. Tacker never again mentioned the event that came to be known as the Cincinnati Failure. Nor were the operatives late for any unit meetings. That lesson was learned. The Falcon was ready for flight. Chapter 5. Wednesday, April 6th, 0011 New Era. 0142 hours. 3 days later. Scott bolted upright in his bunk, his eyes squinting in the darkness. What in the world? In the upper bunk, David stirred beneath the covers. It repeated for several seconds before Scott's eyes shot open wide. The comms. He leapt out of bed and scrambled toward the closet. David blinked and propped up.
What?
The comms! The comms are going off!
The comms are going off! We've got 3 minutes!
2.5. Let's go!
They collided into Beacon and Jaden as soon as they left the room.
Time! 1.5 minutes!
Outside, Falcon Platoon's operatives flat-tracked toward the hangar. Vulture 7 glimmered in the night, the ground beneath it illuminated by the soft red and gold glow of running lights on its underbelly. Tacker waited next to it.
Everyone in the transport, armor up!
Sir, yes, sir!
The operatives dashed up the Vulture's ramp. They opened their lockers where the Enan combat armor awaited. Lightweight, flexible, and technologically superior to anything else on the planet. It was the international symbol of the Eden operative. Its blue and silver finish dulled everything around it. It personified pride. The operatives fastened their helmets and lowered the sky blue visors over their eyes and noses. Tacker ordered the pilot to lift. The pilot acknowledged, and Vulture 7 ascended over the airstrip.
Listen up, everyone. This is a hot drop. Approximately 1 hour ago, two Bachma carriers entered Earth's atmosphere over Chicago with a full fighter escort. They dropped in the middle of the city, and all citizens have been ordered underground. Expect heavy casualties. Hawk, Condor, Griffin, units were initially dispatched, but they got hit hard. We've been called in to provide support. Medics, be prepared for extensive casualties. If you have any reason to suspect no boats are in the air, alert someone immediately. Just because you can't see them doesn't mean they're not there. If any materialize, take cover and hunker down. Also, Chicago is out of power, so make sure your TCVs are on.
The operatives acknowledged and activated the true color vision in their visors. The world took on an ethereal hue. Tacker swung toward the cockpit.
ETA!
5 minutes, sir.
5 minutes, people! Clear your minds, get focused, and get ready to land!
Hope for a smooth descent vanished as soon as Vulture 7 entered Chicago. Ground plasma fire blasted against its metal hull. Behind it, a small fleet of vultures followed.
Touchdown in 30! We're landing behind a barricade on South Michigan. We should be able to exit without resistance. Stick together! I'm not chasing anyone down!
The stomach-turning rush of descent kicked in, and the vulture clumped to the landing. The rear door immediately burst open.
All right, everyone out! Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
The remnants of a building lay strewn across South Michigan Avenue. The barricade. Gunfire erupted on the other side. Burnt asphalt polluted the air. Injured Eden operatives littered the landing zone, and rows of soldiers fired from atop the rubble. Tacker shot a glare to Sasha and Natasha.
Medics, get to the wounded!
The women disappeared into the throng of injured. Tacker continued up the mound.
All right, now there's a company of Bachma en route to the barricade as we speak. Be prepared for heavy resistance.
Scott and Beacon reached the summit of the barricade first, and their eyes immediately widened. Fire illuminated the cratered streets of South Michigan. Lightning white plasma bolts streaked across the ground. Human shrieks mixed with gunfire. It was a war zone. Bachma foot soldiers amassed in the streets. Even from a distance, their unmistakable crimson-purple skin identified them, and their nauseous black and brown body armor seemed to perfectly define their role. Mingled with them were the brutish beasts themselves, the Khanrasis, the war beasts of the Bachma. They tromped ahead like miniature fur-covered tyrannosaurs as Bachma riders sat firm atop them and blasted the barricade with their mounted plasma cannons. The Khanrasi's soulless spider eyes roamed the battlefield above their grotesquely excessive jaws. Scott dropped to a knee and propped his assault rifle. For a moment, held fire. It was surreal. It couldn't be real. Beacon ducked to avoid plasma fire, and then he too propped his assault rifle.
There's no way in hell we're gonna hold this off!
David and Henry hit the summit next. Donald, harnessed with a minigun, followed. Beside them, Jaden glared through his sniper scope. David looked toward the Texan and then at Henry.
You okay over there?
Yeah, I'm good.
A white flash erupted several yards past Scott, and he felt a wave of impact wash over him. Someone had been hit. He whipped around to see Ziegler tumble backward down the barricade. Ziegler's faceplate smoldered, and he hollered. Scott said to Beacon,
I'll be right back.
He shouldered his E-35 and rushed toward the fallen operative.
Hold still, I got you.
Ziegler struggled, and the scorched helmet was removed.
You okay?
A bloodied bruise bulged in the center of Ziegler's forehead.
Yeah, watch out!
Ziegler brushed past Scott, picked up his assault rifle, and charged up the hill again. Scott observed at the soldier for a moment, then returned to Beacon.
You all right?
No.
Beacon said nothing and continued to fire.
Major,
Weiland said as he approached Tacker.
They've confirmed. There are reinforcements coming in from farther down the road. We've got to keep holding them.
Tacker nodded.
You've got something else to worry about, though. There's a team from Cougar pinned down a couple of blocks southwest of here, near the Van Buren South Wabash intersection. According to comm chatter, they're under direct assault from at least a dozen hostiles, and they're too wounded to put up any real resistance.
Tacker crossed his arms.
And we're getting them out.
Not you. You're staying here. Henrik is going after him. He's got two guys from Delta ready to go. But I want you to give him a few more. A small team. Just an in-and-out operation. They should be able to just follow the shuttle rail.
With all due respect, sir, I wouldn't trust Henrik to walk my dog, let alone lead a rescue party.
That's why I want some of your guys with him. I would send you, but I want you here. I don't want to risk you getting dropped on some random errand and leaving me with a platoon full of rookies. If I lose you, they're not going to give me another major.
Understood, sir.
Tacker examined his operatives and made quick decisions.
Remington, McCray, Jergen, Timmons, over here right now.
Four's too many. Send three.
Tacker nodded as Leyland stepped away.
Correction. Jergen, you stay put. The rest of you come.
Scott, Beacon, and Jaden arrived a moment later, as did Henrik and his operatives, two privates named Donner and Wilkins. Tacker dropped to a knee.
Here's the deal, gentlemen. We've got some guys from Cougar Platoon pinned down several blocks southwest. Some are wounded. The streets you're looking for are Van Buren and South Wabash. There should be shuttle rail along that route. Track their comm signals and get some help. Search and rescue, not rocket science. Who's the medic here?
The operatives exchanged looks, though none spoke. Tacker's eyes widened and he glared at Henrik.
Did Leyland explain this to you before?
Yes, sir.
And you didn't take a trashing medic? Vec!
He cut off Henrik's reply.
Rhodes, get over here.
Sasha arrived a moment later and Tacker explained the situation again.
If anything happens to Lieutenant Henrik, Remington will assume command. Understand, Private?
Scott was momentarily taken aback.
Yes, sir.
He was the executive officer? As much as it didn't make sense, Scott knew it was Tacker's only option. Everyone in Falcon was an Alpha Private. One of them had to do it.
Good. Go.
The small band of operatives moved immediately. Henrik led them to the far right of the mound, where he signaled them to lower themselves to a knee.
We're using the alleys to get to South Wabash, but we have to cross the barricade to get to the first one. From there, we'll start tracking them. We'll all cross at once so we don't give the Backmer sequence to shoot at. What are your names?
After each had responded, Henrik continued.
All right. The count will be on three. Then we run. One, two, three.
Henrik launched over the barricade and skidded into the nearest alleyway. The others did the same. No plasma bolts followed them, and they soon found themselves alone and out of sight. At the far end of the alley stood a brick partition with a rusty ladder. Henrik trotted toward it.
According to intelligence, a building collapsed earlier about 100 yards that way.
He pointed toward the brick partition.
We'll have to find a way around it once we get to it.
He gripped the ladder.
Wilkins, come up after me. Then Donna, you.
He pointed to Beacon.
Then you two.
Jaden and Sasha.
Remington goes last.
As Henrik and Wilkins climbed, Jaden leaned toward Beacon.
Should he be shouting like that?
Probably not.
Each pair that followed Henrik and Wilkins maintained distance between the pair in front and behind them, and eventually all had crossed over the brick partition. They found themselves bunched together on the other side of the alley. It was perfectly symmetrical with the alley from which they had come, though it exited out onto South Wabash, the main avenue they were seeking. Henrik and Wilkins strode toward the mouth of the alley as the cluster of other operatives followed close behind. Rubble walled off South Wabash, as it did South Michigan. Unlike South Michigan, however, this wall was impassable. A segment of the shuttle rail was down as well. Henrik emerged from the alley first.
This is South Wabash. Van Buren should be a little south of here. We've got to find a way to cross this mound. Come on!
Beacon crept beside Scott and leaned close to him.
Does this knocker knocker know what a comm is?
Scott hesitated. His thoughts were the same. This guy was announcing their presence as if they had just stepped into a party.
Maybe there's no Bakume here.
If there are any, they sure as bloody hell know where we are.
Jaden caught up with them.
This guy's a moron.
Moron or not, he was in charge.
Just follow his orders.
Henrik stood in the center of the street and propped his hands on his hips.
We're gonna have to get over this rubble.
Beacon grunted.
Right, what are we gonna do, climb?
Yes. Now what looks like the easiest route up?
He's being sarcastic.
Sir, may I suggest an alternative route?
There was a building across the street that looked accessible. They could probably move through it and come out on the other side of the rubble.
Do you see an alternative route anywhere, Private?
Well, yes.
We are climbing, Remington. If you're scared of heights, get over it quick.
Human and Bakma bodies littered South Michigan as Charlie's squad continued to engage. Several additional platoons joined alongside them, and the two opposing forces stalemated. Above the battle, a dogfight between Vindicators and Couriers, Bakma fighter planes broke loose. Back on South Wabash, the search for a path up the rubble continued. Each attempt to climb met failure, and the atmosphere of impatience grew palpable.
Sir,
Scott said to Henrik as he stepped beside Wilkins,
I strongly suggest an alternative route.
In that instant, two sounds simultaneously erupted. The first was Henrik as he whipped around and shouted,
Remington!
The second was plasma fire. Flashes of white streaked toward them, and Henrik, Scott, and Donner were jolted violently. A bolt struck Wilkins in the chest, and he was thrown against the rubble, where three more blasts punctured his torso. Scott ducked back as blood splattered across his armor, and he bolted to the far alley behind Henrik and Donner. The jig was up. The other operatives parted in the opposite direction. Henrik screamed as a plasma bolt ripped through his leg, and he stumbled several yards from cover. Donner grabbed him and dragged him into the alley. From across South Wabash, Beacon howled in anger.
I'm up to 90!
Henrik moaned as Donner secured him against a wall. Scott skidded into the alley.
Can anyone over there see where that came from?
He asked through the comm. Beacon surveyed the corner of his alley, and a volley of plasma blasted his way. He ducked back.
Best I can see, they're on your side, about 30 or so meters down. They're in the next alley down. It's on your end.
How many?
No clue.
Scott looked over at Henrik. The lieutenant's armor had been penetrated, and his leg was torn open. He was out of the fight. Scott was in command. Only days before, the guilt of not knocking on Tacker's door had consumed him. It had consumed him enough to make him swear to himself that he would never hesitate again. He wanted to remember the guilt for that reason. And now, he was the one. There was no hesitation.
Everyone, here's what I want you to do. Sasha, inform Major Tacker of our status and tell him I've assumed command.
Yes, sir.
Beacon, engage them from right where you are. Donner, you'll do the same from over here. Distract them. Jay, while they're doing that, I want you to break into that building right in front of you and get as high as you can on the other side. Find a window. Get in a comfortable sniping position. Call me when you've done that.
Got it.
I'm going to mirror you on this end through this building. When we're both in position on the other side, we'll hit them at the same time from opposite directions.
Gotcha.
Scott drew a deep breath.
Let's go.
Beacon and Donner engaged the Bakma as Scott and Jaden traversed their respective buildings. Jaden up a fire escape and Scott through a steel emergency door. Once Scott had crossed through the building, he found a similar steel door. The Bakma shouted to one another and reloaded their plasma rifles beyond it. Scott pressed against the door and waited. Jaden's voice broke through the comm.
I'm laying down on the roof. I can see them good. There are four of them.
Can they see you?
Not right now.
How many can you take?
I think I can get two before they realize I'm here.
Two. Good enough.
Okay, take out as many as you can and tell me when they find you out. Go.
Going.
Jaden squinted through the scope of his sniper rifle as the Bakma exchanged fire with Beacon and Donner. He eased the crosshairs over the nearest Bakma's forehead. His finger flexed and the gun barrel exploded with a flash of orange. Blood sprayed from behind the Bakma's head.
One down.
He cracked the bolt action and slid the crosshairs over a second target.
Two down. They're on to me.
The Texan rolled back. Scott closed his eyes, took a breath, and slammed his body against the steel door. The door gave way and momentum carried him into the alley, where the two battle-scarred Bakma whipped around to face him. His finger took control and he yanked the trigger. The two Bakma toppled backward before they could fire a shot. Scott stood paralyzed. Gun exhaust filtered the air. The Bachma lay crumpled, face up on the concrete. He stared at their corpses. Assault rifle shouldered, he drew nearer to them. He had never seen Bachma at such close range before. Their cheekbones bulged from the crimson-purple leather of their skin. Their eyes, black eyes without visible pupils, stared lifelessly skyward. Alien insignias covered their breastplates in a grotesque gold, and their plasma rifles lay strewn beside their talonless claws. Beneath them oozed a puddle of dark red blood. Scott propped his hands against his knees and gazed at them. It was still surreal. Finally, he breathed into his comm.
Target's down.
Tacker ducked to avoid plasma fire as he stumbled toward David.
Jargon!
David held his fire.
Yes, sir.
We have reinforcements coming right now. They'll be here in about 10 minutes. Once they arrive, we're going to press over the mound and into the avenue. Be ready.
Tacker glanced at Henry.
How's he doing?
David hesitated.
Very good, sir.
All right, you take care of him.
Yes, sir.
Tacker nodded and continued across the barricade. Shouldering his assault rifle, Scott approached the now clustered team.
Attention, everybody. Hendricks is incapacitated, therefore I am assuming command. If something should happen to me, leadership falls to Beacon.
The Irishman looked impassive.
Get Wilkins' body and put it in the alley for now. If anyone is low on ammunition, take his. He won't be needing it.
Beacon raised a brow.
And Henrik?
Scott appraised the lieutenant.
Sir, can you still walk?
I don't think so.
He turned to Donner.
Get him to his feet and help him along. We can't bog down here.
Scott inspected the building alongside the far alley, where he noticed for the first time that it was the same building that caused the rubble. Though the top half of it had been blown across the street, the lower half remained intact. It must have been a strafe attack on the two streets, but the bottom of this building still looked passable.
Come on, we're crossing through here.
Beacon eyed Henrik.
We should have been doing that all along.
For all I knew, the foundation was damaged.
Scott didn't bother with a response. He slung his assault rifle over his shoulder, jerked open a side door, and stepped inside. Dust hung in the building, but it was passable. The group exercised caution as they trekked from office to empty office until they emerged clean on the other side. South Wabash came into full view. Gunfire echoed ahead, and Scott crept up the alley to the edge of the street. The scene was clear now. The pinned operatives from Cougar Platoon took cover behind two war-torn cars at the edge of a squat structure. Farther down the street, plasma bolts shot in their direction. Scott's eyes narrowed.
We're not going to get into the open. That plasma fire is too heavy. We're taking the inside route again. We'll keep moving through buildings until we get to them.
He turned to Sasha.
Take Henrik. I want Donner free.
The plan was set into motion, and the team traversed from one building to the next. When they reached the alley along the squat structure's edge, Scott searched for a door. He found one, but it was locked. He launched two solid kicks against the doorway, and it burst open.
Find a room in here that can act as a temporary hospital. We have to assume they have heavily wounded. They wouldn't still be here if they didn't. Jay, get as high as you can again. Find a window and work on those back. You're on your own. Just go do your thing.
Jaden acknowledged and weaved up a stairwell. Scott led the rest of the team ahead. The structure was undamaged, though projectile and plasma fire erupted from beyond the walls. Muffled shouts echoed outside. They were close. When Scott stepped into the large room that formed the building's corner, it became clear why the operatives were still outside. Only one window offered access to the inside. The corner lacked anything else. Scott pressed against the edge of the window and peered outside. He could see the pinned soldiers. Three wounded were among them, sprawled behind the cover vehicles. There was no way they'd last there. Plasma flashed toward the window and Scott ducked back inside. Three wounded, one window. The vehicles were on the verge of destruction. Scott knelt as the other operatives watched him. His mind raced. The vehicles. If only the vehicles were closer to the window, then they'd have enough cover to ferry the wounded inside. It hit him. Scott leapt to a stand and returned to the window.
Guys!
He shouted to the pinned unit.
Sit tight for 1 minute. We're on our way.
Scott swiveled to face his team.
Who can hotwire a car?
Donner raised his hand.
Beacon, go with Donner outside and see if you can't find another vehicle. The bigger, the better.
Beacon rubbed his neck.
I saw a big old van across the street on the way here.
A van. Perfect.
That'll work. Go get it. Give Donner as much cover as you can. You're going to park that van right in front of the window. We're extending the wall of cars.
Right.
Beacon said as he and Donner retreated back through the building.
Hurry, we don't have much time.
Jaden knelt down beside a fifth floor window and leaned against the wall. He was right above the pinned operatives. Perfect position. He snaked his hand toward the window, unlocked it, and slid it upward just enough to leave a slit for his sniper rifle. Maneuvering the rifle into position and slipping the barrel outside, he squinted through the scope. The Bachma suppressors were, as before, clustered in an alley.
I think there's about five or six,
he said through the comm. He eased the crosshairs over the corner of the alley and waited for one of the suppressors to lean around. It happened right away. There was a puff of red, and Jaden worked the bolt action.
One down.
Beacon and Donner bolted across the street.
Keep at him, Jay. We need time to hotwire.
I'm on him.
The bolt action cracked through the comm.
Two down.
The Bachma suppressors halted their assault as a third fell. Beacon and Donner skidded to the van. Unlocked, Beacon slid into the passenger seat as Donner set to hotwire. Several twisted wires later, the van roared to life. Beacon jerked his door closed.
Go, go!
Donner slammed the van into reverse and manhandled the wheel toward the wall of cars. Only seconds later, it screeched to a stop in front of the window. Beacon leapt from the passenger door as Donner climbed over the center console. The wall of cars was extended. The window was covered. Time to move.
Let's go!
Scott said. He scampered out of the window, rolled to the ground behind the van, and dashed to the pinned operatives behind the wall of cars. A goateed man awaited him. His armor was charred with scorch marks.
Delta Trooper Grammer of Cougar Platoon, sir. We have three wounded. Too good to go. Everyone else is dead.
Scott's ears perked.
What's the condition of the wounded?
They're pretty bad off.
Can they be moved through the window?
Grammer glanced to the window.
Better than keeping them here, sir.
Scott pivoted around.
Beacon, give us a hand!
As Scott, Beacon, and Grammer transferred the wounded through the window, Donner, Jaden, and another unidentified man behind the cars held off the Bachma attack. After several minutes of suppression fire and struggle, the transfer was accomplished. Sasha wasted no time in attending to the wounded as soon as they were secure. Beacon, Donner, and Jaden continued to engage the Bachma as Scott, Grammer, and the unidentified man slipped inside. Grammer caught his breath and turned to Scott.
Our team, sir.
He motioned toward a stocky individual, the only other uninjured man.
Gamma Private Vows, our techie, and the three wounded are Commander Jose Diaz, Lieutenant Bowen, and Gamma Private Parsons. Commander Diaz took command when our captain fell. We're all that's left of a team of 20, sir.
Scott lifted a brow. Sir. He shifted his peripherals down to his armor where dried blood, Wilkins blood, crusted over his name badge. His insignia was completely hidden. Grammer didn't know he was an alpha. A moment of decision ticked in Scott's mind, and he answered,
Scott Remington, what were you doing here?
Beacon's voice interrupted from outside.
We could use a bloody handout here.
Scott hurried to the window and motioned for Grammer to follow.
How many down?
Beacon laughed.
None.
What about you, Jay?
The Texan's voice crackled through the comm.
I've been working on the ones farther up the road. I killed one and hit another, but there's still more. I think there's two or three still here, but they know I'm here now. It's about five or six more down the road.
Are the only Bachma here the ones in the alley?
Yep.
Scott climbed out the window and ducked behind the van. He glanced to Grammer.
I guess if you had any grenades left, you'd be using them?
Yes, sir. We used them earlier. You should have seen how many Bachma there were before. Way more than we thought there'd be. We think they must have used up all of theirs, too.
Scott unfastened a grenade from his belt and placed his finger on the activation button.
Give me 3 seconds of cover. Fire everything.
Beacon, Donner, and Grammer opened fire. Above, Jaden did the same. Scott pressed the button, whipped up from behind the van, and flung the small orb toward the alley. The operatives ducked down as soon as he released it. The grenade ricocheted off the wall of the alley and bounced out of view. An explosion boomed. Scott leapt over the hood of the van.
Charge the alley! Come on!
Jaden's voice sounded through the comm.
I got him pinned down the street. Go, go, go!
They reached the alley several seconds later. The smell of open flesh hung in the air as they penetrated the smoke, assault rifles poised to fire on any survivors. Remains were scattered across the ground, and entrails dripped from the brick walls. The ground beneath them turned moist.
They're moving! The Bachma down the street are moving!
They were trying to escape. Scott charged into the street. There were three Bachma in full retreat.
Stop them!
As soon as he, Beacon, Donner, and Grammer were in the open, they knelt, propped their assault rifles, and attacked the triggers. The Bachma toppled over. Scott leapt to his feet and bolted toward the alley where they'd come from. The three other men followed close behind. They charged around the corner and trained their assault rifles, but without need. There were no Bachma left. Their mission was accomplished. As reinforcements arrived from Richmond, the battle on South Michigan turned in Eden's favor. Several colonels, Lyland included, led a full assault against the Bachma foot soldiers. They charged into the Bachma stronghold where an intense melee began. David and Henry were in the onslaught and adopted a back-to-back protection system. With David's on-the-spot tactical commands, the two men formed an effective duo. Nonetheless, the battle was far from over. Once the Bachma corpses were collected, Scott and his team returned to the squat structure. Jaden remained on his fifth-floor perch, where he kept watch over South Wabash. As soon as Scott re-entered the makeshift hospital, he stepped over to Sasha.
How are they?
Diaz is stable. Parsons should be shortly. Bowen will be okay, too. They should all be okay, provided they aren't here much longer. They will need more medical treatment, though. More than I can give them.
Scott turned to Grammer.
Why were you out here?
We were initially sent to disable the southernmost carrier.
He motioned down the avenue.
But we met far heavier resistance than command expected. We had a cover unit, but they got ambushed before we were even set up to go. The five of us are the last alive out of a strike force of 20.
You were sent here to disable one of the Bachma carriers?
Yes, sir. Command wanted salvage, and that was the best way to get it. It also sends a strong message to the Bachma when one of their ships doesn't come back home.
A thought materialized in Scott's mind.
How far is the carrier from here?
Not that far. Stay down Wabash, take a right on Harrison, then left down Clark. The carrier's in the Clark-Polk intersection. That was the plan.
Scott looked away for a moment, still thinking. Five men. That's what he had. Was that crazy? His gaze returned to Grammer.
Is it still possible to disable it?
Grammer's jaw sagged, and he cleared his throat.
Yes, sir. We still have Vows. He was the assigned technician for this thing.
Beacon eyed Scott from the corner of the room. Scott turned and stepped out of the room where he adjusted the frequency of his comm.
Major?
There was a moment of static before Tacker's voice emerged on the other side.
Tacker here, you get them out yet?
Yes, sir. Area cleared.
Great!
Here it went.
Sir, with command's permission, I'd like to complete Cougar Platoon's objective. They were ordered to disable the southern Bachma carrier.
Are you joking?
No, sir. I think we have a chance. The Bachma here have been isolated and things are quiet. I think we might be able to get close enough in to make a real run at this thing.
How many of you are there?
Five able to go.
You want to assault a Bachma carrier with five operatives?
Yes, sir. It's the last thing they'd expect.
You got that right. Give me a minute to talk to the colonel.
Lyland was in the midst of the offensive when Tacker's voice burst through his headset.
Colonel, I have Remington on the line. He wants to make a run at the southern carrier. You know anything about that?
Lyland ducked behind a barricade.
Yes. Command wanted salvage. That's what Cougar was doing before. Remington wants to do what?
He wants to assault the carrier.
Did he lose his brain?
I have no idea, sir.
Lyland reloaded his assault rifle and opened fire into the Bachma foot soldiers.
How many men does he have?
He says five. I shouldn't even be asking you this.
The hell? He wants to assault the carrier with five men?
That's what he says, sir.
I'm talking to him.
The channel closed. Lyland adjusted to message Scott.
This is Lyland. Are you requesting permission to assault the carrier?
Yes, sir. Things are calm on this end. I think we can catch them off guard.
Do you have any idea what you're asking?
Yes, sir. I wouldn't ask if I didn't think we could do it.
Lyland grew quiet. The request was suicide. But there was something unexpected in Scott's tone. It was confidence. Even in addressing the colonel, it was total confidence. It was the tone of a veteran. Eden loved salvage. They grew giddy at the mention of it. Five men would never survive a carrier assault, but they didn't have to. None of them had to. If a technician survived long enough to reach the engine room and shut it down, the mission was accomplished. Their survival was unnecessary. But was a captured carrier worth the lives of five men? Could five men even reach the engine room?
Do you really think you can do this?
Positive, sir.
Do it. Just get to the engine room. Make that your priority. Then do what you can.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck.
Scott returned to the hospital.
Listen up, everyone. The original objective for this mission was to disable the southern carrier.
Beacon stood from his perch in the corner.
We are going to take it upon ourselves to complete this objective.
Vaus's jaw hung loose. He was speechless.
Beacon, Donner, Grammer, Vaus, and myself are going to infiltrate the carrier and deactivate its main drive.
Hendricks going to assist Sasha with the wounded. Jay, stay where you are and protect the hospital. Just do your thing.
Yes, sir.
Scott slammed a fresh clip into his assault rifle.
Let's have some fun.